And then I click my little transcript thing here. Okay. So welcome to Marlissa Sullivan. I'm so happy to be talking to you on Tuesday, June the 9th for an interview for the book with the working title of Yoga Radicals, Inspiring Stories from Pioneers in the Field. And so this field, of course, is the field of inquiry based upon yoga practices. But having had the chance to ground this first in sitar, using the ego to eco consciousness prototyping process of the Presencing Institute, the story of this embodied cognition of moving from a me consciousness to a we consciousness. And these narratives, Marlissa, are meant to form the heart and soul of the book, with an intro from Amy Wheeler. I don't know what the final pages will be, but from the stories, I'll try and lift up a little bit of a blueprint or roadmap for the young, I'm calling them the young ones who are coming after. That might not apply to you. You're going to be right in the thick of it there, but you know, the Larry Paynes, the Lauren Roches, you know, they're all like walking the beach these days. So just to remind us of the five-pointed star prototyping model, I like to put my hand up because, as you remember, this is linking the intelligences of the head, the heart, and the hand, optimizing an open mind practice, an open heart practice, and this embodied enacting practice of open will. And it starts with the core principle that the future first shows up in our feelings. And that as the intention of the future begins to give us a chance to pay attention to the quality of energy moving through, a crystallizing vision, and we call it the intention. We have this, of course, in our yoga based, where we're aligned with source and aligned with core. And so this creation of the fields of possibility, or the, I like to call it, this portals of potential, begin to land in the heart mind of an individual practitioner as the divine spark of spiritual practice begins to land. And so as these linkages of the intelligences begin to voice and express, there's this quality and capacity of sustaining this attitude of listening to the universe and these many different layers through which we learn to listen to the universe as a helpful place, as a hospitable environment. And from these personal practices, this crystallizing intention, it goes out into the world and it magnetizes a field, a social field. And then others start to come. These are the core teams that we develop, remembering that it can do almost anything with five people, right? Remember the Margaret Mead quotation. And then as places of experimentation begin to show up, we call them places and spaces or landing strips of the future. This is the place where we feel safe to experiment with those others, with self, with our continuous sense of practice, being in the inquiry. And then it's all about the learning by doing, the failing fast, replicating, tweaking, doing all that modification, adaptation. And so it's both from a research perspective, a personal development perspective, but also more since this is connected to the vision of IAYT to build the field of yoga therapy, that your embodied awareness now, and we'll want to learn, you know, separately in a different bio and a squib about what your achievements have been, right? We don't really need to name that stuff. That'll be pretty clear in another context. But now, as we gather our quality of sacred space together, Marlissa, to find that embodied wisdom that's been gifted to land in your DNA and your path and those that are assisting and helping and nudging. So let's just ground a little bit and feel the big body earth at your special spot on the earth. and inviting, welcoming in this amazing resource of the breath. And acknowledging the elements and the senses that support our beingness, our enacting as humans, as spirits, as beings, as kindreds. And to feel the connection from the earth to the sky above, landing perhaps at the back of the heart, grounding into lower portions, body, mind, system. And then calling upon any guides and angels that might help us today in our conversation. And remembering these are for our readers, these conversations, these future ones. And then just let yourself sense into any other words that might want to come forward as we join.
Did you want me to share those?
If you wish.
Okay. I just have this feeling of expansiveness and connectedness. And really the image I had was just of like the earth and space and that feeling of connectedness.
Great, thank you. So in this first part, using the you presencing, co-presencing, sensing, co-sensing, crystallizing, co-crystallizing frame of balancing stillness and movement. This first question is really to remember back to whenever this your inspiration, this capacity to be involved in a yogic way. What did you remember thinking, feeling, and sensing? And where did it come from?
So I was reflecting on this, and for me, I feel that it's something that has always been part of who I am, about how I think and how I move in the world, in a way that like I've always been interested in, and what my path of yoga really centers on are these questions of like meaning and purpose. You know, what is the meaning of our life? What are we doing here? What is my purpose? And so I was always drawn to, and I wouldn't say that it was ever a decision to be drawn to those things. It was just that's what I was drawn towards, and that's what I did. And so I would say it came more from the heart. And through that, I studied Judaism, which is my religious tradition I was born in. And I went to a Jewish high school, and then later I studied physics. And then later I studied medical anthropology. And really at the core of all of that has always been the like search and exploration of this question of why. And you know, if I'm here on this earth, what is my meaning and purpose? And how does my existence have meaning and purpose?
Great, thank you. And so as this connection began to seed in you with the experiences in your environment and your family background, religious studies, education, etc., can you tell us a little bit more about when you knew that this interest, this divine spark of sorts, began to move into action from this awareness that it was important, it had meaning for you? When did it begin to shape your behaviors to do something with it?
It's interesting because I feel like in my own experience, it's always been something that happened and like I moved towards that which I was drawn to, and what I had as a gift to give. And then I would meet people along the way, different doors would open. So, you know, I was really interested in this idea of meaning and purpose and that intersection of our beliefs and healing. And I met this amazing physical therapist who was like, you need to be a physical therapist. And I didn't even know what physical therapy was. And I went and I watched her work, and she was just magical with her hands. And so I moved into that realm, and then that realm was a bit too narrow for me because I don't really think in that way. So once I became a physical therapist, I met people like Matthew Taylor, and even one of my professors in physical therapy school, Gordon Cummings, who really had this much more expansive, integrative view of what we can do, and really allowed for this question. So I would say that I seem to always be able to meet the people that supported me in questioning that wasn't the norm, or that wasn't, you know, already the path laid out, so that I've always been able to find the way. And so whenever something wasn't quite, the energy wasn't quite there, the feeling wasn't quite there, I wasn't getting my questions answered or supported, I would always look for a way for them to become supported. And so that became yoga. I was introduced to yoga through I had kind of had a little bit of an understanding of what yoga was. I had also taken martial arts. And once I was already in physical therapy practice, I began to like search on the internet for yoga and physical therapy. And that's how I met Matthew Taylor. And then I began to search for different yogas. Like even as I looked at yoga, I found many paths that weren't my path. They were too narrow in how they perceived it. So I was always really looking for this much more, what I felt was a much more expansive way of exploring beliefs and spirituality and healing and how I could practically apply that with people.
Okay, thank you. So I'm hearing a divergent set of gifts that are intersecting over the course of your search, by doing a lot of experimenting, a lot of trial and error, and then somehow this quality of continuously moving towards. So help us understand the energetics and the practicalities of this scanning and moving toward practice of having this divergence capacity and then converging on these choices. That might be useful to some of the young ones about how, in fact, as you begin to really sense into your initiatory process as a healer, as a provider of something new, what's the actual distinction around that pathway that you might help us see a little more clearly? Even an example.
And I don't know if this answers the question or not. You can let me know, but I feel that like in my own healing path, like what I needed for my own personal healing actually came from a yoga therapist. I was looking, it was like, you know, before yoga therapy was a better known quantity, but I had looked it up and I found this yoga therapist. She was, her name is Julie Wilcox. She had studied with Phoenix Rising and Kripalu. And it was a very meditative approach to yoga therapy of a lot of inner dialogue and inner work. So I think that, I think her guidance and way of teaching supported that the way that I thought and the way that I sought to move in the world was okay, that it was valid, that it was something to be believed in and to continue to move forward from. And then I think as I worked with patients as a physical therapist, and I would just bring a little bit of these qualities in of yoga therapy, of connecting to some kind of inner source, connecting to one's truth and authenticity, connecting to one's belief, I began to, it was really apparent the power of these kinds of practices. So I would say both in my personal healing journey and when I worked with patients, it validated that what I sought to do, what I thought was right, what I believed in, and what I was being drawn towards was a valid thing to be drawn towards. So then whenever a door shut, it was just a door that shut. It wasn't my path. It never even really, I don't know so much as that it felt like it was shut. It was just like, oh, that's not the right person or the right setting to be in. I need to find another one. So I was able to have enough, I guess, strength and validation in what my own sense of, I don't want to say right, but my own sense of what was needed or what was important or what was being called for, that was valid, that I was able to keep moving forward and find the people that supported that, the practices that supported that. And I would say that, like, seeing it come alive in my patients who maybe didn't care about yoga at all or had no experience with it and didn't even want to know about it, seeing it work even in those settings was really powerful for me.
Thank you. So this perspective of innovation, right, and the trial by error relative to replicating from the heart's desire, this place of having been gifted, right, first with an interest, and then this spark of inspiration from the people who you did embody some kind of transmission, and then others who you begin to work with, this trajectory of moving from a me to a we. When we think about it, feel into it, sense into it from a place of care, right? You talked about it relative to purpose and meaning. What really began to help you measure, market, and move your ideas further forward so that as your experience was guiding you and you got feedback from the others whom you were doing this integration through the PT and then adding the yoga, talk to us a little bit, Marlissa, around this stacking or the linking of the intelligences. And where in your body mind did you actually learn the most from as you continued to move toward this kind of more neutral being in the stream and beginning to carve your own channel? Is the way we talk about it at Presence. We're all in the stream, but these individual important contributions are about really carving one's own channel in the stream, that new current.
And again, let me know if I'm off on this. But I think, you know, for me, as I began to work with patients, as I worked in my own personal healing, as I worked with students, I had the opportunity to start teaching more. So I had all of these, I had all this information, like you said, intelligences coming together from my own personal path, from, you know, collegial talk with my mentors and friends, from what resonated with students, and even, you know, they worked in tons of settings. So getting to see like how this work had meaning for in many different kinds of settings and many different places. And then the beginning to see like what it was that, I don't even want to say I could offer, but like what it was that was like my flavor in the current, like what it was that I was adding to the current. And one of the things that really has been clear to me is that one of my gifts that I have to offer is taking a lot of different information and making it really practical and applicable, and helping to take really complex ideas, to bring them together with other complex ideas, and to say, well, this is how we can actually like put this into application to help other people. So, you know, with studying polyvagal theory or studying eudaimonia and purpose and meaning, like being able to take all of these different kinds of learnings and cognitive knowledges and just say, well, what is the main intention? What is the main purpose? What is the main meaning? What do they have to offer? So, you know, what does Aristotle's teachings have to do with neuroscience and physiology and with Viktor Frankl's teachings and the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads? And by the gift of all these languages is that it makes it more accessible to people so that I can talk to doctors in the language of Aristotle, which they seem to like, or I can talk to people in the language of neuroscience or people in the language of more spiritual traditions. And because I can see the common thread underneath and speak to that common thread, then the more divergent voices can feel heard and understood and seen. So I think the what I have to offer that river that's moving or that ocean that's moving is the tying together of different voices in a very applicable way. So that's where I've seen kind of like what it is that the way that my life force is putting the intelligence together, the way it flows through me, what it has to offer that current.
Yeah, thank you. So I just want to mention that your arms went out and then they came back in, and this whole wonderful warp and woof of the great weave, right, of these wisdom traditions and these practices, philosophies, nations. And now as the one mind begins to really open up on the planet during COVID and now during this incredible turbulence in the late spring of 2020 as we speak, I'm wondering, as you witness that convergence now of many awakenings across the planet relative to our current reality, separate from the weavings that you've done in your research and personal healing, maybe just do a little reflection, Marlissa, on how you see your practice and process coming with these wisdom traditions and the different domains of understanding into this more applicable way of being and doing in the world. Slide over for a moment to the current context of the turbulence. You mentioned that you've been asking questions about how to serve in this current setting. And I'm wondering if there might be a way to blend a little bit of your background and some of what you've already done with what's calling you now with this new opportunity, let's call it, that's arisen. Just sensing.
Yeah, I would think in one of the things that I've reflected on is that my path thus far has been about really offering one-on-one personal care. So, you know, even if it's a small group yoga therapy session, it's like 1 to 10 people, you know, but it's really, even if it's 10 people, it's about each person's healing. So it's a very, very personal, individualized thing. And certainly when you change one person, it affects the many. But at the same time, what I'm really reflecting on right now is these ideas. My two main areas of interest have been I'll start with one, is the idea of what ethics and values mean, and not just what they mean in an esoteric way, but like, what do they mean in practical application? Like, how do we understand them in an embodied way? How do we enact them in a way that is to the betterment of everyone around us, which is what I love about that definition of the word dharma, is that it's that which is in harmony with us and the world. So, you know, how what does it mean to create ethical inquiry and ethical action that reverberates way beyond me and into society to cultivate change? And right now in my path, it's been a very like, how do I do it? And how do I help this person do it? And, you know, like, it's been a very one-on-one experience. So I'm interested to see that on a larger scale. And same with the other, the more neuroscience piece, through things like polyvagal theory and the autonomic nervous system, and this idea that I've been reflecting on lately about how, just, you know, for the last couple of days, about how my autonomic nervous system, anyone's autonomic nervous system, right, is primed to sense safety and danger in the world. And that's based on our own cultural ancestral heritage, as well as where we're living, how we're living, what's going on currently. And so how do I take that reflection of understanding my own activation and begin to disentangle the habitual tendencies seated there? And again, that's still a very personal journey. It's a very one-on-one journey, which does affect the whole, but I'm really interested in how do we actually take these practices and help them to change the system and to create systemic change? And that I'm not clear on. I'm not clear about how to move from the taking all these ideas from the personal journey into a journey that's much more about systems change.
Okay, great, great. And so the Presencing Institute, of course, has as its basic precepts the need for an individual to integrate and release the personal trauma before the collective trauma can actually be addressed. And so as we breathe in and out together, sensing into this capacity that's opened up on the planet relative to this social field activation is what we call it, this kind of more universal autonomic nervous system that, depending, like you said, upon the environment, education, and upbringing, you know, relative to what we know in stress research, that people have different responses. And so if yoga therapy and the purpose and passion of your integrative modeling and your teaching and your own personal journey begins to root sufficiently into a core intention, right? Here's where the model comes in. What are the questions, other than what you just mentioned, might be interesting to others as they also witness this activation, not only from their personal experience, but through the social field activation? And where in the yoga research has there ever been yet an understanding? Let's look at it just from the fight between the lineages in the research field about whose protocols are more useful than others, and how, as we find our particular attention around things that work in the individual body, when we expand our horizons into the collective intelligence, tell us a little bit about where you might look to, even in early thinking, fragmented awareness, that might help us join more as a yoga therapy community as we grow into the future.
I think as a yoga therapy community, some of the important ideas, I'm going a couple different directions in my mind. So I think an important question is, how do we understand and honor and appreciate and respect the very core teachings that yoga offers us? It comes from, you know, many different texts. So it's not, it's, you know, it could be the Yoga Sutras, it can be the Bhagavad Gita, it can be the Recognition Sutras. It doesn't really, it's like the texts are an individual thing, but the teachings are actually found very much so throughout the texts. And they become, like, the text and the teaching become really differentiated when you get into specifics. But if you look underneath the specifics and underneath the rules, there's common themes that really underlie, that are really foundational. Yeah. And even with someone like Theo Wellcross' work about post-lineage yoga, like, when we get too stuck in the details of this person's lineage, this person's practice, and, you know, what we see that it's true for the individual is kind of true for the whole in this, that, like, if you, when you work with people, you realize that no lineage is going to work for every person. There's no one practice that's going to work for every person, no one breath technique, no one protocol. You're always going to find the person that, oh, well, they can't lie on their back, or they can't do this, or they can't do that, for whatever reason. And so in much the same way, I think to be a really powerful and helpful yoga therapist, you have to not be tied to lineage and not be tied to postures. Like, for example, I hate shoulder stand. It gives me a migraine. It's a terrible posture. However, I have given it to a patient before who it really helped them. So, you know, it's about, you know, being able to come outside what works or doesn't work for you to really see what's underlying. And I think for us to build this community and this field, it's like, how do we both mesh the finding these underlying and aligning with these underlying yoga philosophies that are just so amazing and such wisdoms, with current ideas that we're finding? Because certainly, I remember someone one time said, it was Doug Keller, he talked about yoga always being an evolving, it's always been an evolving thing. And so, you know, yoga has the capacity to absorb and evolve with all the things that we're finding. So, you know, finding these neurophysiological principles that align with what yoga has said, it doesn't replace it. It doesn't mean it's exactly the same thing. It's just really cool to see how neurophysiology aligns with it, with how Aristotle aligns with it, with how we can use this in different settings and with different people. And the more we cut that away by saying this person's perspective is better, this person's way of teaching is better, we really lose that heart. And then we lose its power and its potency. So I think to continue to explore its potency through really coming underneath to see the thread that kind of brings it all together. And I think some of the important questions for us to look at as we move forward, which I think was also part of what you asked, is, what does it mean for these practices to create systemic change? And I know that there's this concept, and I haven't read that much up about it. It's called autonomic synchrony. And, you know, when I attune my nervous system to a certain way, that has an effect on the people around me. So in group settings, we can begin as we attune and align ourselves in a different frequency. And I don't mean that in some kind of esoteric way. I just mean that in a, like, even your autonomic nervous system, you know? And as you begin to attune that into a different setting, it's going to affect, change larger than yourself, so that we can use these ideas in neuroscience, like mirror neurons and autonomic nervous system activations, to begin to give our cognitive minds something to lean on to be able to express these teachings in powerful ways.
Thank you. So this quality of experimentation and creativity from an embodied integration of the practices, of the philosophies, of this learning by doing, your trial and error approach to, oh, that wasn't it, it's this. And then as you move toward, you know, your understanding, your particular understanding of your sacred duty, you know, using the gifts that you came with and embodying them and nourishing them is what I hear you pointing to. So again, we're wanting to peek around the corner a little bit now to the future, having begun this practice research and the credentialing community for yoga therapy throughout the world, knowing that we are in the beginning stages of a lifestyle shift on the planet, I would suspect, as we come into a more ecologically oriented reciprocity with our local environments. And if you were to wave your magic wand, Marlissa, and think into living in community, having had studied, and the continuous nature of practice, and your interest in how the group orientation might be a way to pull others' attentions toward a more ideal state of living in a harmonious, autonomously synchronized, physical, embodied state. Let's dream a little, so that together, even with all this discord, that we might, call in, let's call it, just call in, do an invocation, so that there's something else. I'm in the place of there's got to be something else that we're missing. And we call that, in presencing work, that there's a felt sense in the body, and that this somatic intelligence that begins to come online, that actually is a both personal and collective synchronized activation. I'm just wondering, since you've done that integrative work already, what if you even only had a partial dream of that you might want to share with somebody else who's coming next, who said, I think I need to try this. So this is about motivational strategy. When it's not quite clear how to continue to move toward that which pulls you forward from the intelligences of the heart, mind, and body.
So you're asking about how to, like, not an ideal world, but like how to think about moving forward and that inner motivation.
With the assumption that that's autonomic synchrony, because you're connected through the practice of linking the intelligences. And then that's where the core team begins to manifest and the landing strips of the future begin to arrive, so that experimentation can continue to happen in a harmonious environment, not as a result of crisis or illness, for instance.
Yeah, I remember, you know, as I learned about, so just in thinking of a few things. So in my own, like you said, crisis often, you know, we are moving towards something in a sympathetically activated way. When we're sympathetically activated, our way of thinking is not going to be as clear. The way that our brain is activated, we're going to have a narrow field of attention. We're not going to be able to take more in. We don't have flexible circuits arising in working in our brain. We're not as we don't have as much dexterity and creativity. I remember when I first learned that, I was like, oh wow, in PT school, they always had us take tests from a sympathetic state. What would happen if you took tests from a parasympathetic state? With polyvagal theory, this idea that when our nervous system detects safety, like, and it's on a subconscious level, but when my nervous system is at safety, I'm going to have more access to things like compassion and connection and creativity. When I've worked with patients who, you know, if we tried the compassion meditation, like the may you be happy, may you be healthy, the idea of doing that when you're in a sympathetic state or when you're in some kind of activated state, whatever it is, it's really not possible. You can like fake it till you make it, but I don't really buy into that as much. However, when you have a client and they're able to access a deep state of safety, that's when the magical things happen. You know, they experience a sense of love, a sense of deep personal connection. They have insight into how to change their behavior, insight into what the next step might be. So I think it's really important as we begin to, as we begin to nurture what it is that our gifts are and our next steps and that what it is that I have to offer the world, and it's important to do it from a sense of safety. I would do that with any patient, and I would say, like, for ourselves, the more that we cultivate that regulation within us and we cultivate that deep sense of safety, then we're able to have the felt sense of what that is. And then I can bring that felt sense into anything that arises. So, like, you know, when I feel that felt sense of safety, there's a feeling of lightness, expansiveness, a sense of joy, a sense of just lightness with anything that arises. So that if mistakes happen or I say the wrong thing, there's like a lightness about it when you're in that state. So when things come to me and they help to support that state, then I know that that's a direction that is meant for me. When things come for me and they take me out of that state, then I can begin to first question, like, is it really just challenging me? Is it putting me into an uncomfortable zone, asking me to grow? Or is it showing me something that is really not supposed to be mine? Like the Gita says, you know, you shouldn't do someone else's dharma. So as I begin to really explore, and again, I think there's that level of discernment, like, is this really not my path, or is this asking me to be more powerful than I thought I could be? So, you know, always asking and reflecting on that and having mentors and friends you can process that with. But I think what we were talking about with that systemic change, but having that real embodied sense of when you're in that state of what some people might call flow, or when you're in that state of regulation and creativity, what are the qualities of that? How does your mind feel, your emotions? What are your beliefs? Where do you notice it in the body? How do you move in your body? So that anytime you move away from that, you begin to sense it. And you also develop this ability to be with more discomfort, but to be in that state at the same time, so that you begin to learn to, when you're in a growing edge, but you can maintain that state, and when you're really somewhere that you're not supposed to be.
Right, right. So this idea of fit and harmony and synchronicity is what I hear you pointing to from physical reality. And then when we layer the spiritual awakening practices and processes from so many diverse traditions, now when we touch into the new, right, into the future that has a flavor, a savoring from these senses that begin to come online in harmony, your work, as we wind down now in the gunas, in these integrative forms of helping people understand yoga therapy, in your teaching, in your personal work, just take a moment now, Marlissa, to think about some last offers. And sometimes what I like to invite people to sense into now is, what has surprised you in your journey? Or right next to that, what has really challenged you? So that those typical polarities get to open up your heart mind, so that even a transmission or a favorite text that's kind of your lightning rod to your Dharma path, you know, like your stake in the ground, the spine that weaves the music of the spheres through your offer. I'm just trying to call forth some of the poetry in you that is so present in your application. But if you were a young one and you wanted a like go-to practice from someone who wants to be like you, right? An integrative thinker, a person who can put complexity into focus, who's able to breathe in and out pretty easily, having done a lot of personal work. Maybe like, what does your gift most appreciate in your nurturance practice?
I think the what has really surprised and been really powerful to me is just the amazement of and wonderment of what life brings to us. And you know that when we're really receptive to it and we allow ourselves to meet it openly and compassionately, things we never thought arise, things that we never thought emerge. And you know, that ability, like I feel like that pull a lot in society to have to fit into a box or to have to like always be this one thing. And just the freedom that comes from noticing that contraction and welcoming its opposite and welcoming the ability to just wonder what the next step is, like wonder what is going to emerge from this. And I think I've been really surprised in life about, you know, I think of like, I often have thought about like, as a small person, like I never could have planned for everything to happen. Like I couldn't have sat down with a schedule book and said, on this date, I'll meet this person. And on this date, I'll meet this person. And it, like, you know, being open to that, like curiosity and exploration, and by doing what it is that excites you and brings you joy, that what needs to come will come. So that quality of like patience and curiosity and faith, I think is, and I don't always love the word faith, but it is kind of a faith that when you're open and receptive to the world, what emerges is going to be beyond your thinking. It's beyond what your thinking mind could plan. And I, you know, some of the really powerful teachings to me have been that there's a quote from Viktor Frankl I talk about a lot, and it's about, and I'm not going to say it right, but it's something around, what if the question of the meaning of life was reversed. So instead of me saying like, what is the meaning of this supposed to be? Instead, maybe life is asking me. So that if I'm able to meet life in every moment, life will offer me what purpose is. And to really rest into that power, I think is really amazing.
So let's just take a moment to receive again the music of the spheres working through you and the gifts and the surprises and the listening practices that I hear you so deeply engaged in. So it's with deep gratitude, Marlissa. It's been a real delight speaking with you. And this is the end of our interview for the Yoga Radicals book. And so if you wish, I can send you the unedited transcript if you want to see it first. I'm happy to do that. Been a couple of people who wanted that. Otherwise, it goes through my hands and it will be framed, you know, according to the narrative approach. So whatever you want. The Zoom interview goes over to Singing Dragon. So is there anything else that you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
I'm really looking forward to the book and to hear other people's paths and process and and I'm happy to share.
Yeah, it's really been a delight. And again, let me just turn the recording off. Recording.